and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. Before we get going, we should point out this show has been pre-recorded with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis, so unfortunately we cannot take your phone calls or any more of your emailed questions this week, but if you do have email you want to send, send that to ask@wbaa.org. We'll be happy to get it on the program for our next show with Mayor Dennis or any of our other mayors, and you can also tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. How are you? Good to see you.
You know, this is, we're actually in the future now, aren't we? Kind of, when you think about it.
Yes. Well, we as we're taping this, I suppose, are in the past, but we're hearing it in the future.
Yeah, so whatever we do now could be history before we even finish, right? Because these
suppose.
Shows are the best ever.
I don't want to think about the butterfly effect of Ask the Mayor. That might mess with my head a little bit.
That's some heavy sausage right there.
That's right. Let's start with a listener question from David, who writes, I live near the Morton Center, and I have noticed since moving City Hall to its new temporary location, the area around the Morton Center's curbs has not been taken care of. He says sidewalks did not get shoveled or salted in winter. Now the grass is high with lots of trash and pet droppings. Does the city plan on maintaining the property while renovations are taking place?
Generally speaking, I haven't been out there since they put the fencing up, but generally speaking, the contractor who's doing the work is responsible for not just the safety component of the construction site, but also the appearance as well. We've run into this several times in the past, not necessarily with contractors doing work for us, but contractors doing work for folks in the private sector. And usually what we do is we have some of our neighborhood resource teams go ahead and get on them and have them rectify the problem. In this particular case, it's not just been that. There's been issues involving the parking spaces. There's been issues involving contractors actually utilizing some of the other reserved parking spots around the area. So there's a lot of different things that go on with under the auspice of having a construction project go, and this is one of those things. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and make notification to the contractors, let them know they need to police their areas, and if they don't do so, then we're in a position to go ahead and assess some fines.
We are taping this program a day before primary election day. It's sort of a down day for your city. There are literally no contested races in West Lafayette, only one in Lafayette. You are on the ballot again for what may be the last time, although we talked about this 4 years ago, too, and you were fairly sure at that time that that was going to be the end of it all. So let me start by asking, what has changed in those 4 years? Why give it another go? What do you have left to prove?
Well, nothing to prove, but just a lot of stuff to finish. When I first got into this, you know, a 4 year term seemed like a long time, and that first term was a long time. It's like any job. When you're the new guy on the block, there's a lot to learn. There's a lot of protocol to follow. And given that it was an absolutely new experience, you know, every day I showed up, it was just, it was in some cases overwhelming. But now we're in this sort of long stretch of time where we're actually doing things that are not just about who's in office. It's about what's happening within the community. You know, we feel really good about the past, well, now almost 12 years. But we feel that there's just a few more things that need to be done. Now, I'm not sitting here standing on a pulpit saying it's only me. But, you know, I've got the familiarity with the position, and I've done some, not just some work within the city of West Lafayette, but also in Greater Lafayette, Tippecanoe County, and in some cases in the state. And we just want to finish strong. We want to get the rest of the infrastructure work done. We want to get some of the developments done and then call it a day, whether it's in another 4 years or more. But I feel pretty strong that we'll probably be able to get this done in four.
Or more? What
or
does
more?
That mean?
That means you never know. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in a life that you just can't predict. I'll be at the end of this fourth term, I'll be 64 years old. And, you know, that's a pretty good age to start considering retirement.
But yet still shy of the age at which you can draw your full Social Security.
There you go. I mean, you know, sometimes you actually have to, even though you're in elected office, you have to think about yourself a little bit. But it's a long way away, you know. We'll go ahead and see, you know, how things fold. And plus, you know, the reason why we're taping this is because I'm going off on my motorcycle trip, and we know how that history works. So, fingers crossed, you know, I'll be back. But, you know, yeah, it's really hard to say. But all I know is that it's been a great decade or a great 12 years, and I'm looking forward to four more.
I was going to ask about the motorcycle trip coinciding with Election Day, because I knew that that's what you were going off to do. And it has an interesting symbolism
doesn't
to it.
Doesn't it, though?
Because you don't need to be here for a primary election day. There was nobody who was challenging you.
Yeah.
There is still the outside chance that could happen in the next couple of months through other machinations. But nobody is challenging you. And this was pretty well assured. It seemed highly unlikely that the Democrats would challenge you or that Republicans would challenge you from what would have to be pretty far right of where you are politically. What does that mean for your mindset as you attack what might be your last 4 years in office?
Well, it's weird because after doing something for so long, and I'm not trying to sound ungrateful or arrogant or anything, it just becomes such an important part of your life. And it really sometimes, we really haven't been challenged for the last term very much either, but it really becomes just the way that you think. You're not thinking anymore about 4 year blocks. You're thinking about what you're doing operationally, who you're working with, what's going on within the community. It becomes more of a lifetime commitment than it is just of a segmented commitment into each 4 years.
You're sort of speaking the opposite that I have heard members of Congress talk, who say, if you are elected to, let's say you're elected to just a 2 year seat in the House of Representatives on the national level, I have heard people say, you're lucky if you get 6 months to try to make something happen where governance is concerned, because then you have to start raising money for your reelection campaign. I've heard that presidential candidates maybe get 18 months in the Oval Office before they have to start worrying about trying to run for reelection. You're talking about that in the opposite way. You're saying that this has become an institution for you, that you are able to focus not on having to worry about raising money, kissing babies, shaking hands. You can worry about the minutia of the city and trying to run it on a daily basis. Do you think that ability has increased, especially in the last two terms where there's been virtually no electoral challenge from anybody?
Yes, I absolutely do. And it's funny because, you know, legislators have a completely different mindset of why they do what they do, you know, and with the exception of a few, I mean, legislators spend their time away from home, and they go to Indy or they go to DC and they do what they have to do, and they come back periodically to shake hands and kiss babies and generate revenue and then go back to do their thing. I'm here every day. You know, I'm interacting with the people that I serve every day, except for when I go on the bike trip. And oddly enough, even on the bike trip, every now and again, somebody comes up and says, hey, aren't you the mayor of West Lafayette? And I would say, no, it's the other guy. The guy that I go with, I blame it on. No, I don't do that. But I mean, when you live and work and play within the population that you serve, it's almost like you get that validation on a, and in some cases, depending upon what your days are like, on an hourly basis. You have that interactivity. You don't have to come to, in some cases, with some of our legislators, especially at the federal level, come to an unfamiliar place to try and make sure people are aware of who you are and what you do. You know, I get an evaluation every day. And I get an evaluation at the grocery store. I get an evaluation when I'm out walking my dog.
Well, that was my next question, is what should the expectations be for the people of West Lafayette over the next 4 years? Isn't it reasonable for them to have ever-escalating expectations to be, hey, this guy has been in here for 12 years. He may be in here for as much as 16 or more. How should people fairly judge your next term in office where expectations are concerned? Isn't there an argument to make that they should be higher this term than they were last term?
You would think. But I mean, we've had a lot of big bangs over the past 12 years. I mean, we've done a lot of big things. And there comes a time when, you know, when you're dealing with these large multi-million dollar, in some cases, hundreds of million dollars of projects and development, there comes a time when the people that you serve actually do say, well, what about us? You know, yay, State Street, yay, all these things, but what about us? And that's a real humbling effect. I mean, anybody that thinks that they're here forever is way off base. I mean, every day there's something that could cause things to go to pieces. But for me, it's different because the front door issues, I think that's the cliche that they use, are probably more important to me than these massive, large things because of who they impact. And when you've lived in one particular area for almost all of your life, I mean, some of these people actually helped raise me, you know? Those front door issues become the kind of thing that become your bread and butter. And to be truthful, I get more satisfaction out of that than I do on something where we've worked collaboratively with major organizations or major industries and brought in some huge developments, because when those happen, that's greater good for, in some cases, the area. But when you talk about somebody who don't get whose trash might not get picked up, or you talk about somebody who might be having a problem with their street or a sidewalk, and we can actually rectify that problem and get it done in a short timeline, those are the kind of things you almost want to go home and high-five your wife about.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. This show has been pre-recorded, so we cannot take your phone calls. You may email ask@WBAA.org at any time for any of our four mayors. You can also tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. On to some other things. One of the items that's on the agenda for this month's city council meeting, which happens a few hours after we're taping this, mm-hmm. is the regulation of so-called pedal carriages. Mm-hmm. These are essentially beer wagons yeah. where a sober person yeah. drives and yep. then the increasingly inebriated people behind him or her pedal. I have seen these elsewhere. I've not seen them in West Lafayette mm-hmm. yet. Are they coming?
They might. The council has a lot of questions about them, though, as do we all. You know, I've seen them in Indy, and they seem to be relatively controlled, and I think that's the big thing. You know, when you talk about Indianapolis, I would venture to guess that the population that they're serving is somewhat older, maybe more experienced with alcohol. When you look at a college community, you might be dealing with a rookie or two, somebody who just might have gotten to the age where it's legal to drink, and they might not have the necessary maturity to be able to handle, you know, an excessive amount of alcohol, as if anybody can. But I think in this particular case, we're trying to make sure that it's safe. We're trying to make sure that it only goes on certain streets and roads, definitely not on State Street. And then we're making sure that the people who are going to be providing the alcohol, the bartenders, the drivers, I guess, are going to be responsible. And then there's also going to be some requirements on the part of the patrons that are utilizing that service. So for instance, smoking and things like that, because there could be nothing worse than somebody having too much and start flicking their cigarettes at pedestrians. So we're going to be pretty big-handed on this one to make sure that if it does happen, that's going to happen in a way that's going to be safe. It's going to be happening in a way that's going to make sure that it doesn't, you know, give the city of West Lafayette and obviously Purdue University a bad reputation, but also be something that could be kind of fun. You know, I mean, when you see them run right, they're pretty neat. But in a college community, you just have to make sure that you've got the necessary brakes to be able to put on in the event that it goes south.
No pun intended.
You're going to beat me to it.
Uh-huh. Well, let me ask about that slowdown effect, because one of the things I've noticed in other cities where I have seen these is, in some cases, there is a traffic issue because they do not go fast.
No, they don't.
And you, as you have pointed out on this program and elsewhere, have five rush hours a day yeah. already yeah. mm-hmm. around the campus especially. So sort of a two-part thing. One, you talked about being limiting in terms of where they can go. Do you anticipate them, if not on State Street, then in the campus area, because that would seem to mm-hmm. be the primary clientele. Mm-hmm. But also, what do you do about running them in such a way that they don't contribute to the rush hour traffic jams that you have?
Well, that's a big concern. And a lot of times what happens is it's just an enforcement issue. You know, I have not read the contract, because the one that we were submitted, we've made some additions and some tractions to.
So a company has already said to you, we want to
do this. Looking at an overall model.
I see.
And we just want to make sure that whatever we have is going to be palatable for the community. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was limited to specific events. You know, for instance, home football games, where in all reality, you see what it's like here during a home football game. It's pretty constricted anyway, so they really wouldn't have an adverse impact on a lot of the traffic. It's predominantly pedestrian, and then with the exception of when people are coming and going to the game.
So you don't see this operating on a random Tuesday night?
Well, we'll see. We'll see, because I don't know what kind of a business model they have. Because usually what they do is they get the permitting, and then they start crafting the business model after they get the permitting. And for us, the permitting is going to be the challenge, because the one thing we don't want to do is put anybody at risk. And as we all know, those years between the ages of 18 and 20, whatever, pretty bevied with experimentative behavior.
It seems to me that what I have seen from these being used primarily in Indianapolis and other big places is it's tourist groups or mm-hmm. it's groups of bachelor or bachelorette party
yeah.
goers.
Yep. Or 50-year-old parties or 21-year-old parties, those sort
sure,
of things.
Sure, something yeah. like that. Is there much call for that in your community?
And I really couldn't answer that. I don't drink. And the last time I was in a bar was to break up a fight. I was dressed differently than everybody else. But I think that we live in a society now where, you know, entertainment is paramount. You know, look at what we've done. I mean, even with classes, I mean, everything's involved, multimedia presentations and things like that. And I think, you know, the proverbial, you know, kid hanging out the passenger side of a car going woo down the street. I think this is a step better than that. And the presumption is that if you're out in the open, if it's in an environment that's in a business setting, so to speak, because there's a commercial interaction going on, the hope is that people would be more responsible and act their age. But there's no guarantee. You know, alcohol is the great uninhibitor. You know, so hopefully people will realize that if they're going to be participating in this, they're going to have to do it correctly. And that's not only the people that are on the wagon, but the people that was a funny pun, wasn't it? But the people that are driving it, and then also the company that owns it.
The other thing that I noticed the ordinance says is you talked about being restrictive where it can go. It says there are going to be specific pickup and drop off mm-hmm. points mm-hmm. that the city will say these are the areas in which you're allowed to mm-hmm. do that. And then I got to thinking about the topography of the city. I have noticed these, it seems to me, in cities that are pretty flat,
yeah.
like Indianapolis.
Yeah.
You do not have a flat
no,
city.
No, we live on a hill.
And it seems like that would be pretty hard to get up a hill.
Could you imagine? You know, I mean, everybody gets loaded and then they go down the hill and they got to try and get back up. Not cool.
I have a hard time getting up State Street
I've
Hill
watched
on,
you stand
on my
on your
bike.
I've seen that. That's not pretty. Yeah, I mean, those are a lot of things that have to be considered. And, you know, the other thing is when you look at a college community, you've got a real dividing issue when it comes to consumption of alcohol. I mean, there are people in the near campus residential areas that have been, you know, they've had some serious damage done to their property because kids get overserved and they think they can tear up whatever they see. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting conversation and I'd see where it falls.
Another matter that's before the city council, but it looks like it's been put off for a month or so, is discussion of an ordinance that would add a new term that is now punishable by a $1,000 fine. And something the city's lexicon is missing right now, which is the term dooring. This is something that bicyclists yeah. talk about when someone, it's very evocative when you hear the term. You can just see
yeah.
a bicyclist riding next to a car, and somebody opens the door, and the bicyclist
yeah.
goes
like
flying over the handlebars.
Benny Hill, yeah.
Right. So let me first ask, do you have any numbers on how many instances of this the city sees a year to give us a sense of why the ordinance is under discussion in the first place?
No, not off the top of my head, but we work very closely with Bike Lafayette and Bike West Lafayette. And, you know, we have been strongly advocating alternative modes of transportation because of the density of our population and, again, those five rush hours. And so these two groups have been giving us a lot of help. And this isn't something that just sort of, you know, the bell was rung recently. You know, we've always considered ourselves to be bike friendly. We have, you know, dedicated bike and pedestrian lanes. We have 40 miles of paved trail, et cetera, et cetera. And the one thing that we've always had that seemed to sort of put us behind the curve is some legislation that allows for us to have some punitive measures for people that act maliciously or irresponsibly. And it's like anything else. You know, sometimes accidents do happen. Sometimes people are unaware of what they're doing. And the hope would be that if we do have some of this legislation on the books and we're in a position to educate the population as well as educate the bicyclists, because by no means are they beyond blame at times too, then it'll create a safer environment for a bike-friendly community.
Do you have knowledge that there are people who do this maliciously?
Yeah, unfortunately I do. And again,
really?
not from this life, but in a former life. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I always assumed it was just an accidental thing.
No, there's people that have a real attitude about joggers. I mean, I can tell you stories about before the trail systems were put in place, I used to run up and down Happy Hollow Hill. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was me. And I don't know how many different times I've had beer bottles thrown at me, you know, trash thrown at me. Yeah, actually, Michelle and I, my daughter and I, were running up Happy Hollow Hill and got some garbage thrown at us, too. So, you know, the things just happen, unfortunately, and it's one of those things that we could legislate and codify. But, you know, as we all know, you can have all the rules in the book, and if you get one stray calf, then they're going to do something they shouldn't do.
So you have a community with a large transient population
yeah.
that tends to come and go, and to say mm-hmm. nothing of you've got one group of people that comes in every fall, you've got a group of people that leaves every spring,
mm-hmm.
and you are constantly having to remind people mm-hmm. what the rules are, especially as you put in new rules.
Yeah.
How do you talk to a group of, let's face it, fairly inexperienced drivers in
yeah.
many cases, people who have had their licenses maybe 5 or 6 years at the most.
Or some of them that actually come here to get their first license.
Right. So how do you talk to a relatively inexperienced driver population
mm-hmm.
and have that conversation on an ongoing basis so that everyone knows mm-hmm. you can get fined $1,000 for this?
Yeah, well, for us, basically, it's going to be through technology and through our website and things like that. Also, we've got a lot of public speaking opportunities, and we can utilize that format as well. But when's the last time you had your license renewed?
2 years ago.
Did you have to take a test or anything?
No.
You just went in, flipped in the...
I did. Well, back I did at... In fact, I did it online.
Oh, did you really?
Yep. Didn't have to do a thing other than click something online.
Well, they used to. And, you know, when you first get your license, you have to go through a process, which involves a fairly involved test. And the hope is that as this becomes more and more the fashion across the state, that the state will encourage people to be aware of the rules of the road, not just for the vehicles, but for bicyclists and pedestrians as well. But here locally, the only thing we can do is what we've always done with legislation. Specifically, it affects a certain population group, and that's to post the hell out of it. Just make sure we've got signs, make sure we put it into our newsletter, make sure we put it as a banner on our website, and make people aware of that. But the sad part of it is that, generally speaking, you know, if you're driving and if you're driving conscientiously and you're aware of your surroundings, you don't do that stuff. But if somebody's jerk enough to wait until a bicyclist's close and whip out his door just because he's got a thing against bicyclists, you know, the best thing to do is have a law with some teeth in it. So when you catch that guy, because the good thing about bicyclists is they're used to being threatened, either deliberately or accidentally. And so the first thing they look at is a license plate. And we can track them down and we can find out what's going on. And we'd have a mechanism to actually exercise some form of punitive measure.
You can always send questions for any of our four mayors to ask@wbaa.org. Tweet those questions @WBAA News on Twitter. Because the election is coming up, I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about something I've talked about with Mitch Daniels, which is his proposal that perhaps as soon as next academic year, students will have to pass a civics exam to graduate from Purdue. He and plenty of others believe students don't know enough about how government works. First off, from a local level, do you agree with that? You talk to a lot of students over the course of the year.
And I don't want to sound arrogant or anything, but it's funny how familiar with local government kids are. When I go and speak at high schools or even some of the trade schools or over here on campus, they've got a very strong understanding of how this process works. They know that a mayor is the chief executive of the city. They know that there's a process to get things done. They know our legislative branch. They know, you know, some of the boards and commissions that are worked within the city. And I'm sure the same thing applies over in Lafayette for Tony. There seems to be a strong grasp of how things work. Now, when you get out of this local level, when it gets to the state or the feds, it is confusing. You know, specifically if it breaks off into a judicial process, that's confusing. I don't think it's a bad idea, but when I was a kid, we always had that taught to us. That was part of our history class. And we used to have to take a class called government. And that's when you would learn that. And the presumption is that, you know, in order to be a good citizen, you have to understand how the people who work for you get there and what they're capable of doing.
So you're telling me that you think, it sounds like, and tell me if I'm misinterpreting this.
I will always do that, Stan.
You're saying that if you go to a student in your community, you think perhaps they could tell you who their city council person is?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm saying more functional. They understand
the
process.
Doesn't that suggest, though, the kind of disconnect that President Daniels is talking about.
That's a good point. Yeah, you make a good point there. It's true. And when you look at voter turnout, you know, maybe that's indicative of that lack of understanding of who is actually running the place instead of, you know, what that position actually is capable of doing.
Well, not just voter turnout, but, I mean, let's be honest, how many races are even going to be contested in the general election in West Lafayette this year? Two or three, maybe?
Maybe. You know, us in elected office like to pat our backs and think it's because we're doing such a great job. Not. But I think you're right. But...
So I mean,
we sort of get into the woods here because, you know, you look at a community and you look at how it runs and you look at the big picture stuff. You know, I can walk to school safely, I can ride my bike safely, I can get a job, I can be proactive and all this kind of stuff. And then if I choose to, I can volunteer to run for office. And 9 times out of 10, when I go and talk to somebody and you have somebody that actually will stop into your office and say, well, I have political ambitions, I'd like to be a counselor, I'd like to run for mayor or whatever. I never ask the question why. And I guess that's a little short-sighted on my part. I just start, you know, on my little
soapbox. Well, are you even
in
a position to ask why? Because it seems like the participation levels, as far as I can tell, are so low that, you know, you don't have any reason to turn people away. And so let me get out of the woods and get back to, is this lack of engagement, this lack of knowledge, of, especially of local government? Because I'll tell anybody who will listen, you want to know who affects your life? It's your local mayors and city council people. It's not your elected representatives in Washington. Do you think that that lack of interest, whether it's interest in running or interest in just knowing who your city council person is or going to a city council or a board of works meeting, is that hurting municipal government in your city and in Greater Lafayette generally?
I'm pausing here because I'm thinking about this one, because I think in some way it does. And let me explain that. You know, I've been in office for longer, almost as long, when I was in school, for a lot longer than I have been in office, but I've been in office for a long time. And there is a presumption, I think, that if somebody has been there a long time, that they really know what they're doing, and we'll just let that person alone. And sometimes it's just the opposite. Maybe because of that lack of civic understanding, it's just that there's not somebody healthy enough to compete. You know, I know that there are people that would be a lot better at this job than I am.
And a lot of elections are won on name recognition, full stop.
And when you're looking at like who can run for what, they have these little tests that they do about name recognition. Exactly. But I think the real important thing to think here is that, you know, public service is not the same as working in the private sector. Getting picked for a position in and of itself is only opening the door to what public service is all about. You serve the people that put you there. And oftentimes when people are satisfied with that service, maybe they choose not to run for that. But the unfortunate side, and maybe where the civics component comes in, is there are so many other ways to affect the services that are being provided. There's so many better ways to affect local government. Running for office is just one. If you run for city council, you're one of many. If you run for elected office, such as mayor, you work with a group, a legislative body that empowers you to make some of these decisions. And, you know, and
well, but you don't even have to run for office.
Might not be what's known.
You don't even have to run for office to make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, what I have noticed at your city council and board of works meetings is attendance by the public, if there is not a controversial issue on the docket, is pretty low.
Yep.
Is there anything you can do if Purdue does decide to enact this civics test requirement to get more students to local meetings so that they will know who their city council person is, because Purdue is represented by a city council person?
Well, I mean, they are now, and that's the first time that they ever have been.
Right.
And I think to that point, maybe mandatory. I mean, we actually did have classes. I don't know if it's high school or college now. It's been a few years ago. Classes that had to attend council meetings. They had to attend some form of a public meeting, and not just, you know, I mean, like Board of Works, Redevelopment Commission, or council. And they had to take notes, and I actually had to sign something that they were there. I think that's a value. I think that's kind of cool. I know when I was a little kid, we used to go to, I mean, back in those days, Lafayette had routine meetings. West Lafayette was still relatively small. And we used to go to Lafayette to watch what was going on. You know, our history, was it a history teacher? Anyway, yeah, it would take us there and we'd watch the meetings. And again, at that age, I mean, it really didn't have much of an impact. But if we'd have done that maybe 5-6 years later, we would have been a lot more politically aware of what's going on.
All right, Mr. Mayor, that's the time we've got. Thanks as always. Enjoy your bike trip. And
yes, sir.
We'll do it again next month.
If I'm back.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember that you can find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. Tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. If you've got questions, email them to ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.